Now, actually, the time is for a short Dhamma sermon. We were discussing about Anapanasati Sutta, which is available in Majjhima Nikaya. So, in one particular time, Buddha and the rest of the Sangha were at Migarumatu Pasada, that is which Visakha has donated. So, at that time, Buddha was considering the minds of the monks, and most of them are diligently practicing, and many great arahants were giving them instructions, and there were majority of novice monks, and they are also quite ardently practicing. So at that time Buddha decided that the typical tradition is at the end of the Vassa, that is after 3 months of Vassa period. So the tradition was to leave this present monastery and then go on traveling to various other villages, cities. And so that kind of a tradition was there. But Buddha understood that this time, these monks are practicing very diligently. So this movement, this traveling might be a hindrance, might be a obstacle, so he decided to further stay another month in this same monastery. And at the end of that month, so again Buddha checked the minds of the monks, and then he understood now they are in a good position to further deepen their understanding, and they are also in a very positive mood, and he praised the monks for their diligent practice. And then, as a kind of a common methodology, common practice, he is prescribing anapanasati, breathing on, the mindfulness on breathing. So, he particularly mentioned, anapanasati bhikkave bhavita bahulikata mahapala hoti mahanisansa. So, he mentions that if one practices anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing, it will be of a lot of benefits. And it will be extremely useful. So likewise, he is giving a sort of appreciation at the beginning, and then he starts prescribing anapanasati. So the beauty of this sutta is that he is coming up with the methodology with 16 steps, which covers all four satipatthanas, all four foundations of mindfulness using anapanasati. Typically in the Satipatthana Sutta, Anapanasati is simply a one section in the Kayanupassana. And you have to go forward with Vedanupassana, Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, maybe with various other objects. But here in Anapanasati Sutta, Buddha comes up with a methodology which actually helps to fulfill all four foundations of mindfulness, keeping Anapanasati as the strategy, Anapanasati as the basic method. So in the 16 steps process, he is explaining that first four steps belong to Kayanupassana, next four steps belong to Vedananupassana, next four steps belongs to Chittanupassana, and last four steps belongs to Dhammanupassana. So this is how he is explaining. The first four steps, actually he starts with a very simple manner, like sato asasati, sato pasasati, where you simply have to establish your mindfulness on breathing, as we did some time back. So we are using it as a simple mechanism to get on to mindfulness, to simply start with bare attention. Because this breathing is a natural process happening in the body, and we don't need to wish, we don't need to think about it, we don't need to make any effort for that, and the body itself breathing. So we are using that. So we are using that for our advantage. So then he is asking us to investigate breath further, whether it is longer, shorter. So that is the first and the second steps. Third step is that we have to observe carefully about the whole breath. Sabbakaya patisangvedi asasi samiti sikkati. So that is the investigation of the whole breath. That is the third step. Because as I mentioned during the guided sitting session, breath starts with a very soft, gentle manner, and then it's increasing. The intensity increases. You can feel it properly. And after that, it may reach its threshold and then starts to fade away, disappear. And ultimately, it reaches this end and ultimately disappear. And then there's a slight gap. At the end of the slight gap, that's the beginning of out-breath. That also begins with a very gentle manner. And then it also reaches its threshold. And then it also disappears. And after another slight gap, the next in-breath disappears. So the next in-breath starts. So likewise, you can understand this is a kind of a cycle. So if you are to closely examine this cycle, you have to let go of the past, let go of the future, because this breath itself is a very subtle phenomenon, and you can't find out all these subtle aspects without giving up the past and the future, because your mind has to be extremely focused on breath. Then only you would be able to recognize these minor details, subtle details. Now, when you succeeded in this third stage, so the natural outcome is calming down. It is not that you are purposely calming down. As a result of your practice, it starts to calm down. So Buddha gives a kind of a advice here, telling us to restrain ourselves. Don't have any doubts. Don't change your posture. Don't linger into the past or future. Just pay close attention to the breath. So you have to examine it very carefully with some sort of a restrainment, because you have to behave in a very gentle manner, very soft manner. Then only we would be able to recognize all these subtle details. Now, as a result of our examination, breath starts to calm down, and we have to facilitate that. We should not misunderstand, thinking that breath now is disappearing because I am now losing my mindfulness. I am now reducing my mindfulness. It is not. Since you are practicing continuously, and if your attention is well established on breath, and you are able to recognize beginning, middle, and the end, as a result of this recognition, as a result of this practice, breath starts to calm down. That is a natural effect. And Buddha asks us to facilitate it. Pasambhayam kaya sankharam asasissami iti sikkhati. So that is the fourth stage. So we have to facilitate this calming down process. So breath is now further calming down. It becomes subtler and subtler. Now even you can't recognize or you can't distinguish whether this is the in-breath or the out-breath. So to that level it calms down. Now once it is calming down, so you have to facilitate it, you are supporting it simply by keeping yourself very steady. In the sense that you are not changing your posture, you are not sort of having wrong ideas, any doubts. Rather simply allowing the mind to calm down. So as a result, your body also calms down and almost like breath disappears. At this time, don't panic. Don't think that you may not get enough oxygen or any of such kind of wrong doubts. Those are not, those we should not entertain. Rather, we should understand, so I have now just given up the life. So I am now dedicated my life to the triple gem. So I allow the process to happen. Now you simply have to come back to the back seat rather than doing the driving job. The beginning stages, you may do little driving, you may do little controlling, but as we move forward more and more, we have to observe it passively. Passive does not mean in a very lazy manner, but we do some active observation, but allowing the process to happen by itself. We are not trying to control it. We don't have any preferences. Simply we have a kind of a neutral attitude and observing it very carefully. This process is happening. We are now observing it very carefully. So as a result, we may come across the fifth stage. So Buddha says the fifth stage belongs to Vedanupassana. So Vedanupassana starts with a very pleasant kind of feelings. Piti Patisangvedi Asasisamiti Sikkhati. So because your mind has extremely calmed down and body doesn't have any kind of pains, the body almost like disappeared. So there are maybe little pleasurable feelings. They come and go. Immediately they come and go, or they may persist for a while. They may appear like a wave. It might appear like you are sunk into a deep pool. So likewise, different states can happen. So Buddha asks us to look at them objectively, without asking them, without wishing them, without expecting them, and again, without holding them. When typically a pleasurable feeling happens, we like it. We immediately like to own it. We immediately want to have it for a longer time. But right now, we don't have any that kind of an attitude. Rather, we understand these feelings are merely feelings. They come and go. They are not mine. And I have very little control over them. So therefore, when they are happening, we simply recognize them. They are simply pleasurable feelings. You know, there are three types of main feelings that Buddha has mentioned. Pleasurable feelings, sukha vedana; painful feelings, dukkha vedana; and neutral feelings, adukkama sukha vedana. So these are the three types of feelings typically we experience. So here also, when pleasurable feelings are happening, happy feelings are happening, pleasant feelings are happening, we all have to recognize them, not owning them, not expecting them, not trying to hold them, not trying to possess them. Rather, they are simply pleasurable feelings. So if we are able to step back and look at feelings as feelings, then we can succeed this stage. One important thing is, say for example, if you do walking meditation, there when your foot touching the ground, you are able to look at it like a third person, like an outsider. Even though there's a sensation at your foot, you are able to observe it like an outsider. Similarly here, when a pleasant feeling happens, you should be able to recognize it like an outsider. We are not claiming it as mine. We are not trying to own it, possess it, but simply rather observe it, experience it like an outsider. So then we have some kind of a distance between our observing mind and this pleasant feeling. So if we are able to continue like this, then Buddha says we can reach the sixth stage, that is called Sukha Patisangvedi Asasisamiti Sikkhati. So we feel more and more pleasant, kind of a happy stage. So previous stage may be little gross feelings, but now they becomes more subtle, pleasant feelings. Kind of happy abiding is available in this sixth stage. So that also we have to recognize. Now the pleasurable feelings have calmed down and they appear very subtle. They are not gross as before. Now they are also refining. So we are now recognizing this refined pleasant feelings, sukha patisangvedi. And as we move forward, then the seventh stage is there, that is chitta sankhara patisangvedi asasisamiti sikkhati. So Buddha asks us to look at feelings as well as the perceptions. Because as you know, as a result of our practice, these feelings also can fade away. They can become more and more subtle. And at that time, there's a possibility that various signs can appear in the mind. You know that we have closed our eyes, but there's a possibility that we can see certain images. So this does not happen to everyone, but some people might be able to see these various images. If you are a very faithful character, probably you might see a Buddha image, maybe a pagoda, maybe a Bodhi tree. Likewise, various beautiful sceneries might be possible. If you are with a little unhappy mood or kind of you are a kind of a generally you are a little your mind is a little resentful, then there could be a possibility that you might see maybe a skeleton, maybe a kind of a devil figure. Likewise, little, you know, some unpleasant images may be possible, may be visible. And all these, Buddha says, are simply images, simply perceptions, simply signs. We should not take them as real. So this is the most important thing. If we take them as real, then we get misled. So this is one important area that we need maybe someone's guidance if we see these things, or if ourselves are able to sort it out. The important thing is you can come back to the breath. Breath is there always like a lifeline. It's like the safety jacket. Whenever we are in a trouble, you can go back to the breath. So if you are able to recognize these signs as signs without taking them as real, then we succeed. Otherwise, we go wrong. So Buddha says, sanya, perceptions, are like a mirage. They are not real water, but they appear like water. So we have to be very careful. We have to be very wise at this stage without getting misled to these various images. So they appear like very beautiful. Buddha image may be a very beautiful. Pagoda may be a very beautiful. But we should not give any emphasis, any value to this, because they are simply like mirage. So our duty is to come back to breath or come back to the posture so that we can simply let go of all these images. More and more mind becomes further subtle. So you have to simply allow these perceptions and feelings further calm down. So therefore Buddha mentioned the 8 stages, asambhayan citta sankaran asa sissamiti sikkhati. So you have to facilitate to calm down all these feelings as well as perceptions. Now they also disappear. Now we come to the third section, that is the Chittanupassana. That is what we started last time. So in the Chittanupassana section, now we are in a position to look at the mind directly. So far we are looking at our body and the feelings. Feelings may be bodily feelings as well as the mental feelings, but mostly we may be observing bodily feelings. So at that time, the yogi is in a better position to recognize, because there are bodily processes and we have a mental process to recognize it. But on the other hand, in the Chittanupassana section, so we are recognizing mental processes using another mental process. So therefore, it requires some established mindfulness, some developed clear comprehension, sampajanya. So therefore Buddha warns at this Chittanupassana section, telling us that if you haven't have any enough mindfulness, if you don't have enough mindfulness, if you don't have enough clear comprehension, it's no point of getting to this section, because you might go wrong here. Because if you have weak mindfulness, then you can become a victim of the ongoing mental process in the mind. So we have to first establish ourselves in some strong mindfulness, then we would be able to recognize various mental processes as mental processes. Otherwise, we simply get inside the mental process and we become an actor there. Just to give you a simile, suppose there's a musical show and it is quite interesting. The singer is dancing and singing and the other players are also giving very beautiful melodies, and it's extremely interesting. And if you are overjoyed, you can even get on to the stage and you also can start singing, jumping, dancing. And you now is not in the audience, but you may be on the stage. So something like that. So if you get somewhat deluded by the mental process which is going on in the mind, we can become a victim of that process. We can become a player in this process. We might start to play a role in this process rather than being in the at the audience. So very much like we have to look at the drama while being in the audience, then only we can play, we can really practice Chittanupassana. Assume drama is the thought processes going on in the mind, and the mindfulness is the kind of the observer observing it while being in the audience. But if you have less mindfulness, weakened mindfulness, easily you might get tempted, and you may get on to the stage and you also start to dance, start to play. So that is wrong. So we have to have mindfulness in order to look at this process, as a mental process. We are not claiming it as mind. Suppose there's a lustful thought going on, we are not claiming it as my lust. If there's a aversion going on, so we are not claiming it as that I am in a aversion, I am in a kind of a hate. Assume that there's a kind of a jealousy thought going on, so I am not claiming it as mine, me or mine. Rather, it's simply a jealousy thought. Similarly, suppose there is a loving kindness thought going on, kind of a metta going on. Here we are not supposed to develop it, telling that, okay, this is simply metta, so I have to grow metta. There is no such that kind of a instruction in the Chittanupassana. Either it may be wholesome, either it may be unwholesome. Both we are looking at in a very neutral manner. We are not promoting wholesome thoughts here, and we are not trying to subside unwholesome thoughts either. We simply have to recognize them. So that is the most important thing. So just to give you an example, in the Chittanupassana section in the Satipatthana Sutta, Buddha says, Saragangva chittan saragan chittanti pajanati. When there is a lustful thought, so you simply have to recognize it as lustful thought. Vitaragangva chittan vitaragan chittanti pajanati. When there is a kind of a renunciative thought, you have to simply recognize it as a renunciative thought. Sadosan chittanti pajanati. When there is a hateful thought, so we have to recognize it as a hateful thought. Vita dosam va chittam vita dosam chittanti pajanati. If there is a loving kindness thought, so we simply have to recognize it as a loving kindness thought. That's it. We are not promoting loving kindness, and we are not promoting hatred. We are not promoting renunciation, and we are not promoting lust. So we simply have a kind of a neutral attitude towards the both sides, because we are now here to recognize the common characteristics of all these thoughts. These thoughts are coming and going. They doesn't belong to us. And we don't have to give a label to them, telling that this is a, in the sense that attribute kind of a wholesome or unwholesome here, but rather we understand, so they are arising due to causes, and they last for a while. And then ultimately, when the causes disappear, they also disappear. Samudaya dhammanupassīva cittasmin viharati. Vaya dhammanupassīva cittasmin viharati. So that is how Buddha instructs in the Chittanupassana section in the Satipatthana Sutta. So we simply have to recognize how these thoughts arise and how these thoughts disappear. We don't have to worry when negative thoughts arise, and we don't have to elate when a wholesome thought arises. So we are in the middle. We are like in the baseline. When the graph going to the positive side, we are still in the baseline and watching it. When graphs going to the negative side, still we are on the baseline and we are observing it. So more and more the mind's shifts become less and less. What I want to tell is, typically, our mind jumps to the positive and negative frequently. But more and more we become mindful, so this jump becomes less and less. So it's getting closer and closer to the middle, closer and closer to the baseline. So Chittanupassana actually helps to happen this, because now we are not looking at wholesome thoughts with a kind of a positive angle, thinking that we have to promote it. And again, we are not looking at unwholesome thoughts, thinking that we have to immediately discard them, immediately get rid of them. We don't have that kind of an attitude. Rather, we understand wholesome thoughts are also thoughts. Unwholesome thoughts are also thoughts. They are coming, they are occurring due to causes. And when these causes disappear, they too disappear. So we have very clear understanding about the common behavior of all these kinds of thoughts. So as a result of that, so mind becomes more and more free from thoughts. Mind becomes more and more kind of settled. Now as a result, there could be a subtle form of happiness. Because you know, typically our happiness depends on the sense pleasures. Say when we see something through our eyes, if it is beautiful, we get happy. When we hear something through our ears, if it is beautiful, then we get happy. Suppose if we are tasting certain food, if it is delicious, we get happy. So likewise, we make ourselves happy depending on the sense stimulation. But here, now all our senses are in a very calm position. Now the mind is also operating in a very gentle manner. As a result, we may be having a very pleasant feeling, and this is not kind of a worldly pleasant feeling. It is called an unworldly pleasant feeling, what you call as a niramisa piti. Niramisa means it is not coming through the typical sensual gratification or sensual pleasures. Instead, it is coming through the practice. So this situation is actually mentioned as the 10th stage. So ninth stage is the Chitta Patisangvedi, that is the beginning stage of the Chitta Anupassana. 10th stage is called the Abhippamodayan Chittang Asasisamiti Sikkhati. So you understand, okay, now the mind is in a very pleasant situation, a very consoled position, because there is less up and down. There is, you are in a kind of a middle range, kind of in a comfort zone, you are not going back and forth, but in a very comfortable region. So mind is now settling. So that is the 11th stage. Buddha says samadhang chittang asasisamiti sikkhati. You are promoting this process further and further. So as a result, mind becomes more and more calm, more and more refined, more and more settled, samadhan chitta. So when we reach this stage, it's almost like the body has very much disappeared, feelings has almost calmed down, the mind has become very clear because no signs appear. So it's a very comfortable, spacious kind of a mind. You know, I mean, typically our minds are congested with various things. We have various memories related to the past, various wishes, hopes, and plans related to the future. And at the same time, we may be looking at something, we may be hearing something in the present moment. So as a result, there are so many signs and perceptions and feelings, and all these things are collected in the mind, appear in the mind. As a result, mind become very congested. Mind become very busy. But because of the practice, now mind become more and more calm and calm, settling. And as a result, it is now very tranquil. And again, it becomes very spacious. Because more and less signs all have faded away. Feelings also have calmed down. So, therefore, mind becomes more and more spacious. So, this is the 10th stage of the Anapanasati Sutta. We are samadhaṃ cittaṃ assa sissāmi iti sikkhati. So we have to facilitate this process. We have to allow the mind to further settle, further become still, very spacious, and we have to promote it. So with that, I'll conclude today's short Dhamma sermon. So I'll open the session for question and answers.
Avasai Bhante, we've received today 6 questions currently. Question number one, mindful sitting. Venerable Sir, I have been practicing mindful sitting quite successfully, focusing on my breath for some time now. I can handle regular distractions of mind when it is jumping to various thoughts without much effort as well. The breath becomes subtle and fades away most of the time. Lately, I started not observing the breath at all when I sit down for mindful practice. If I deliberately look for it, I can find the breath, but in a very subtle manner from the beginning. I checked what are the other sensations in the body that I can feel, but rising and falling is not prominent as well. The only sensation is the sitting posture, which is static compared to the breathing process and rising and falling process. What is the technique that I should be using to observe these sensations, which are not dynamic? Thank you and much merits for your invaluable advice. That's the end.
Yeah, I mean, if you understand that now you have gone through certain stages of Anapanasati and step by step the breath had calmed down and almost like disappeared, then there could be a possibility that various feelings can arise, as I explained in the Anapanasati Sutta. So we have this Anapanasati has the beauty of guiding you towards the Samatha practice as well as towards the Vipassana practice. So anyway, so we have to little be patient. Where are the mind being promoted? Where are the mind being guiding us? So the mindfulness itself can evolve naturally. So we should not be in a hurry to divert ourselves to Vipassana quickly. Rather, we have to see how it is happening, how it is going to happen. Suppose you are observing this calming down for a considerable period of time, and there is no any further progress going on for say about couple of weeks, then there is a possibility we can make a kind of a little adjustment to the practice. Otherwise, we better continue our practice as what is going on right now, because when enough qualities are developed, naturally the next stage will occur, will happen. We don't need to struggle for the next stage to happen, but rather we are continuing our practice for a while. Appears like there is no progress, but later the progress happen naturally. The next stage blossoms naturally. So we have to be a little patient till the next stage happen. On the other hand, suppose your breath calmed down and you can't now recognize whether it is in-breath or out-breath. It's almost like breath disappears. And at that time, suppose there are certain sensations, subtle sensations arise in the body. So if such sensations are available, then you can keep your attention on that sensation. There may be several sensations available. At that time, you can select most prominent sensation and then keep your attention at that most prominent sensation. So if you are able to recognize that most prominent sensation, just again and again apply your mind to there. And at that time, as a result of this continuous application of your mind may start to concentrate on that new sensation. Now it is not at your nostril, rather it is at this new place. Suppose the sensation is available at your knee and you recognize it is quite sort of observable and that is the most prominent sensation. And again and again, you are now applying your mind there, applying your attention there. As a result, the concentration develops at your nostril. Now slowly, slowly transfer to the knee. It happens gradually. Don't expect that it happen immediately, because you are now developing anapanasati and you are again and again keeping your attention at the nostril. And as a result, your concentration is build up in the nostril. But slowly, slowly, when you apply your mind or your focus attention towards that sensation available at the knee, as a result of repeated application, this concentrated mind at the nostril may slowly transfer towards the knee. So when it happens, almost like you, the nostril has disappeared, every other parts of the body disappears, and simply this sensation is available for you. Now you have to observe this sensation again and again, very carefully. Now this becomes your primary object. And assume this also you couldn't do properly. Then there's another sensation available at another place. Probably you can try for that. Because you need to train the mind in order to keep your attention in a consistent manner in that new place. Because as you know, in walking meditation, we gain this skill. You know that during walking meditation, we have to keep our attention on left leg. On the next stage, at the next step, we have to keep our attention on the right leg. At the next stage, we have to keep our attention back in the left leg. So likewise, we are now trained to locate or place our attention at different places, different locations. So this is a kind of a skill that we developed using, say, walking meditation. So you are now using that skill during this sitting session. So various different sensations happen at different places throughout the body. And now you are observing that immediately. Now, whenever certain sensations appear, you are immediately keeping your attention there and start to observe. So assume that it disappears and there's another sensation available at another place. Now, immediately you locate your attention at this new place and you start to observe. So likewise, we have to start our observation more and more. So very much like now we are into, we can say we are now moving towards the vipassana as well as moving towards the dhatu manasikara, where different sensations or element characteristics are happening, and we are now observing them very carefully. So we can get into this stage, and actually it depends on how the meditation evolves. As I said, don't jump to this immediately. Just allow the mind to behave as it likes for a while and see how it is evolving. And if it is like simply the mind stays at the nostril and the new different sensations going to appear in the body, now it is a kind of an invitation for you to start the observation. Yes, Chatu, we can go to the next question.
Question 2 of 9, general question. Venerable Bhante, I am not sure whether this question, this is a question for you to direct. My question is, I was born and bred in a bit of a city, which was surrounded with our grandparents and relations. All my grandparents, was 4 of them, had a very happy life and died when they were old. But they never had any issues with their mental breakdown or any sort of depression, anxiety, etc. But now my mum is experiencing dementia and she's struggling a lot, and all my sisters and brothers are having so much issues around her sickness. I know most of our friends' parents have the same issue. My mum was very religious. Every day until recently, she offered Buddha Puja in the morning and Dhāna, but never practiced meditation or never had proper understanding about the Dhamma as we do now. Venerable Bhante, is there any advice for us not to become into this sort of situation? That's the end.
Yeah. So actually, we need to understand actually the whole world is going through sort of a difficult situation. So more and more we are vulnerable to various diseases as well as some unknown type of issues, and the environmental pollution, wars, diseases, pandemics, and all different issues are there. So therefore, we have to be very strong in our mental side. Otherwise, we might get on to dementia or depression or agitation, or different issues can arise. That's why we have to be mentally strong. And how we develop this strength, how we develop this inner strength is the point. So there may be various situations. So if you have a good sort of friends, so this good association will help us to come out of these kind of issues, because they try to help us, they try to advise us, strengthen us. So that is also important. On the other hand, if we ourselves have gone through some practice, as you have mentioned, so suppose we are reading the books of the Dhamma and we are trying to live according to the Dhamma, and we are trying to strengthen our attitudes, our skills, our abilities. So that is the mindfulness. That is the practice of mindfulness, because the outcome of mindfulness has various benefits. Very much like, say, you can withstand various difficulties, and it develops some resilience, where whenever you go through some tragic situations, you are able to recover then from it very quickly. And again, you are not considering things extremely seriously. Suppose when things are happening in a negative manner, still you have the capacity to come out of the situation and look at it objectively. So that is one important aspect that we are developing. Now, if you closely follow what I was telling so far, so I have always advised you to come out of the situation, come out of the incident, and look at it objectively. Look at it like a third person. Look at it like a outsider. So that skill actually we are developing in mindfulness. Sometimes we call it as macro awareness. So we are not being caught up in the process. Rather, we have the skill to come out of the process and look at it like someone else's process. It may be a bodily process. It may be a feeling. It may be a mental process. But still, we have the capacity to look at it objectively, look at it like an outsider. So that helps us to disengage from the ongoing process. Now, how we go wrong is when we really engage in the process. We become an actor in the process. We are playing a role in the process. Then we are inside the mill. Rather, if we are able to come out of the mill, out of the scene, just back to the audience and look at it in an objective manner, then we have a capacity to disengage from the process. That actually gives a big separation from the process. We understand, okay, there are various causes and conditions available, and I may or may not have the control over them, and they are actually happening, and that is the nature of the world, and everything is impermanent, everything is subject to change. That is the nature of the world, and we can't change that process. We don't have much control over that process. So that is the important thing to understand. As Dhamma practitioners, we need to understand how things are happening due to various causes and conditions, and we have very less control over these causes and conditions. And we have to accept that. It is not that we get defeated. Rather, we mentally strengthen ourselves to cope up with the situation. Because this continuous practice helps us to have that skill. Suppose you do Vedana Anupassana. So in Vedana Anupassana, so we may come across various types of vedana, various types of feelings. It may be pleasurable feelings, it may be painful feelings, it may be neutral feelings. And we have very less control. We can't arouse them. We can't create them. Rather, they occur due to causes, external causes maybe. Internal causes, external causes. Due to those causes, these different types of vedana, feelings are arising. Now, more and more we observe that, more and more wisdom is developing in ourselves. So this wisdom helps us to mature. This wisdom helps us to mature spiritually. So when different thoughts are happening, we can observe them. When different feelings are happening, we can observe them. When sensations happier, we can observe them. When different element characteristics happier, we can observe them. So likewise, we are getting some sort of a maturity to observe. So therefore, what I can say is this practice is therefore strengthening ourselves, and again strengthening more towards the wisdom side, as well as we can disengage from the ongoing process and look at it objectively without considering it me or mine. And this is how actually we can cope up with the situation.
Question number of 10, I think. This is a feedback or a suggestion. Now, just before I say this question, I'll put a link into the messages, because we are already asked for some feedback just before this session. Anyway, this is the question. Venerable Sir, we have been benefited from the guided session in this program, even though it is only for 30 minutes. Usually we do walking practice before any sitting, and this mix in all monastery retreats and sessions. Can we also consider 30 minutes walking before our program starts? I know there is a practical limitation, but it will be an encouragement to all to find some method to practice walking along with sitting sessions with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, that's what I have mentioned during today's sitting session. So before the beginning of the mindfulness session, you better do a half an hour or 1 hour walk and then start this session. Then, because then immediately I will be guiding the sitting session, then you are in a good position to continue your practice. Because if you immediately sit and try to start, then the mind may little distracted. But if you are somewhat coming from the walking session, then you are quite ready and you can easily continue your practice and sharpen your mindfulness. So therefore, this is a kind of a valid suggestion. So I think rather than incorporating this to the program, so it is our individual responsibility for us to somewhat practice, do a little walking session, and then come to the mindfulness practice session. So at that time, we can get into the situation and incorporate that developed mindfulness to our sitting session.
Question number 4 of 11. This is about day-to-day activities. Venerable Bhante, this is about application of mindfulness in day-to-day life, especially during crisis situations like today. I have been practicing sitting and walking mindfulness, and I'm keen to apply the practice for day-to-day ups and downs. Most of the time with sharpened mindfulness, I can observe how clinging, anger, frustration, fear, etc., are creeping in. How they stay for some time and how they fade away. Sometimes this makes me not react and keep calm, but most of the time it is very hard to stop a reaction of some sort. I can admit that the severity of reactions and impacts have reduced. However, next time if something bigger happens, I know that I will be shaken even with mindfulness next to me to dampen the impact. I have heard in one sermon that it is not possible to be mindful and completely eradicate this liking and disliking phenomena. Rather, the Buddha advised to be mindful and be aware of the root cause of all of this, which is identification of self or sakkaya ditti, and eradicate this. Much merits if Bhante can explain this point. That's the end.
Actually, I can refer Indriya Bhavana Sutta that is available in the Majjhima Nikaya. That is the last sutta in Majjhima Nikaya. So, as you said, I mean, even for noble people, you know, even for Sovan, Sakadagami, Anagami, so the Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, so even this Manapa, Amanapa can happen. That is, the likes and dislikes can happen. So, but the Buddha's advice is, in general, not only for these noble people, in general for everyone, is to come back to the upekkha. Now, say for example, if you are an ardent practitioner, if you are a long time practitioner, you may be able to recognize the equanimity. You know, you have gone through some amount of development of mindfulness, some amount of concentration, and using that concentration to develop wisdom. And as a result of developed wisdom, you may be able to recognize equanimity as your guiding place, as your resting place. So Buddha encourages us to use this equanimous state as kind of a refuge. So whenever we see something through our eyes, assume that we get on to some pleasure. So Buddha advises us to come back to that neutral place, that middle range, rather than staying in that pleasurable situation. Similarly, when we see something, if our minds get on to some sorrowful state, again Buddha's advice is, rather than staying there, as quickly as possible, come back to the middle range, come back to the comfort zone, come back to that equanimous stage. So this applies to our ears, tongue, nose, body, as well as the mind. So when we come across various sense stimulation, it's quite natural our mind can jump either to the positive side, either to the pleasurable side, or to the negative side. So that is common. But the advice is how quickly we can come back to the middle region. This is how the damping, as you have quite correctly mentioned. So rather than being in the spikes, now come back to the middle region, which is less tension, less friction, and more comfortable, and more in a stable position. So more and more we become, our mind become stable, stabilized, and it is quite natural, as you have mentioned, as even it is common for noble people, so therefore it's quite common for others. And so as practitioners, what we should do is to return to the middle region as quickly as possible.
Question number 5 of 11. This has two parts. It's a bit short, but anyway. Mindful walking. At the start, the mind has gone out. After some time, I can focus to the leg and I see all the processes within my feet when walking. When I am walking, I feel that I'm walking with rhythm. When I put the leg on the floor first, the first part is touching, the back part of the leg, the middle part, and finally the fingers. That's the end of walking. Mindful sitting. When I start, it is very difficult to keep the mind on the nose and it goes here and there. But after some time, it comes to the nose and I can see the breathing. I see the start of the breath take some time. I'm not sure exactly. And there's an empty space. Then the breath becomes very smooth. I can see breathing touching my nose and emptiness. Then again the breath, and after that emptiness. At that time, I feel a pain in my foot. It is very difficult, but I don't focus to the leg and focus to the breathing. Again, the mind goes to the pain. Then I again focus to the breathing. It is a very good feeling. Last time, I felt like there were ants walking on my body at that time. But today, I can only feel pain in the feet. I focus to the breathing. I can stay by looking at breathing in this manner. That's the end.
Yeah, I think rather than jumping towards the breath, better start observing these various feelings. Because just by returning to the breath does not give enough wisdom at this moment. Rather, breath actually helps us to develop fair amount of mindfulness, fair amount of concentration. And we should use that concentration to develop wisdom. Now, as you can understand, now we are in the Kayanupassana section in the first stage. And then we can go to the next stage, that is the Vedanupassana. So if there are various feelings arising, so rather than trying to discard them, rather than trying to ignore them, just recognize them as the next type of objects that we can actually observe. Because feeling is a very versatile region to develop mindfulness as well as clear comprehension as well as wisdom. Because these painful feelings, especially even though they are unpleasant, more and more you start to observe them, so they have very rich information for us to develop wisdom. Now they appear like one unit of pain, but more closely you observe them, probably they appear like a bunch of pain, as a collection of pains, collection of feelings. Then you may be able to recognize individually, one by one. So there may be, say, 10 pains or 100 pains. So you might be able to look at each and every subtle, minute pain. So likewise, your clear comprehension improves. And when you are looking at this minute kind of feeling, minute kind of painful feeling, so it actually arising and passing away in a very quick manner. As you know, the Buddha has given a kind of a very beautiful simile. It is like a thunder raining, the kind of a heavy raining. At that time, there are water bubbles arising and bursting very, very quickly. So likewise, these little pains, minute pains, are also arising and passing away very quickly. So it is actually as a good field for us to develop mindfulness as well as wisdom. So therefore, it's better rather than ignoring them, start to observe them.
Sorry, Bhante, we're actually a little bit late. Is it okay if we go a bit over time?
Yeah,
okay.
You can go in.
Okay, this is question number 6 of 11. The rest of the questions are very sort of short. Mindfulness in day-to-day activities. Dear Venerable, I notice more agitation. Anger comes into me more than usual when I'm in work environments. I see myself acting upon anger by letting it come in. After I act on the anger, I have a sense of defeat and worry for acting like that. I know I have a choice in the little moment before anger takes from emotion and then to action by words. Any advice appreciated with metta? That's the end.
Yeah, I think because more we start to develop mindfulness, so knowing all these difficulties, knowing different attitudes we have, different say drawbacks we have, is quite usual property. So otherwise we simply become a victim of these different say character traits in ourselves. But if we are able to recognize this as a character trait, So I am a person who quickly jumps to decisions. He quickly jumps to agitation. I'm a person quickly get on to some, say, arguments. So likewise, we understand these different drawbacks in ourselves. So that's an important understanding. This is an important insight. Because otherwise, we continue these bad habits forever. But this mindfulness practice helps us to understand ourselves in a more positive manner, and then only we can recover from this. Then only we can correct ourselves. So therefore, look at it in a positive way, rather than considering you as a bad person, I am a short-tempered person, likewise. So we maybe at the moment I am a short-tempered person, but still I have the capacity to correct myself. So that is the beauty of practice. That is where the practice helps us to better understand our character, better understand ourselves, what is the present situation in the mind. And as a result, we can apply break. Suppose we may be talking with somebody, and he or she may tell something unpleasant. So we get angry. So suppose we may immediately make an argument, we may blame the other person, we may hit the other person, that may be our previous character. But right now, as a result of our practice, we can apply break here. We can step back. Rather than immediately reacting, we can step back and see this anger as anger. See this agitation as agitation. See this unpleasant feeling arising in ourselves as unpleasant feeling. Or this kind of a resistance arising in ourselves as resistance. This is an understand. This is the only way for us to recover, to get out of from this bad habit. So therefore, so what you have understood about yourself is quite constructive. Otherwise, you can't correct yourself. So therefore, take it positively, and more corrective measures can be applied when you understand our drawbacks.
Question number 7 of 11 is a general question. Dear Bhante, at what stage does samadhi or concentration happen with metta? That's the end.
Actually, concentration happens in different levels. Even when, say for example, you are watching breath. When you know this is the in-breath, this is the out-breath, there's a little amount of concentration. When you know this is the long breath, this is the short breath, so there's a little amount of concentration. So likewise, the concentration improves. So therefore, we can't say there is no concentration at these stages. There is a considerable amount of concentration is available. And when you know this is the beginning, this is the middle, this is the end of the breath, or this is the beginning, middle, end of the in-breath, and there's a gap, it's the beginning, middle, end of the out-breath. So likewise, if you are able to recognize various stages or the complete cycle of in-breath, there's a considerable amount of concentration is there. Without that much of concentration, you can't recognize these details. But don't think that concentration is always like looking at the same object, and that is actually the samatha concentration. But here, the object may vary, and the concentration actually can improve even with a changing object, evolving object. Now the breath evolves. So when we are in the beginning of the breath, or beginning of the in-breath, and we are not in the middle, we are not in the end. Now we are in the beginning. Assume now we are in the middle. So this is a different, there's a change. Now we are at the end. Now we are at the gap. Now at the beginning of the out-breath. So likewise, we may be at different regions. And as a result, our concentration develops. So that is typically we call khanika samadhi. That is the instant kind of concentration. But later, so we may get on to the fourth stage where pasambhayam kaya sankharam. So the whole breath disappears like. So you can't now distinguish whether this is the in-breath or out-breath. So there are the concentration become more refined. So therefore, concentration also is a kind of an evolving quality. So it's difficult to say there is no concentration at any stage. Concentration is available at different levels.
Question number 8 of 11, mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, during breathing practice, I feel the need to swallow and this interferes with concentration. Do you have any suggestion to overcome this? That's the end.
This is a kind of a common question that when Chatu, I mean, you referred swallowing, right?
Yes, swallowing.
Swallowing in the sense that you become larger? Is it what you meant?
I think they mean swallowing saliva. I think that's what they mean.
Right. So actually, this is a common question. So because that's why I typically started the session with keeping your tongue at a very restful position, maybe in the middle position. And when our mindfulness and concentration increases, this saliva can come to the mouth. So at that time, you simply swallow it. That's the only solution. And later, this will disappear. So as your mindfulness and concentration improves, these kind of little side effects are there, I would say. But these side effects simply disappear as you improve. At the moment, just swallow and then you can continue.
Question 9 of 11. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, what is your view on preparing for meditation? For example, do you recommend taking the 5 precepts or performing chants like such as Ratana Sutta before meditation? Do we need any protection before we meditate? Thank you for your guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, typically we do some sort of what you call dedication towards the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha and the Kalyana Mittas. So that way we actually ground ourselves. We become very simple person, very sort of humility arising in ourselves rather than becoming a high-minded, conceited person. We become a very soft, gentle human before meditation. So that is that kind of an attitude, that kind of a mentality is quite important for the practice. So if we start with thinking that I am an expert, I know everything, I am a big person, I am a so-and-so, then it is quite difficult. Then we start with a lot of conceit. But rather when we dedicate ourselves the whole life to the Buddha, whole life to the Dhamma, Sangha, Kalyana Mitta, then we like given up. We become nobody. We become like an earthworm. We become simply a sand particle. So that is quite a comfortable environment for the development of the practice. So actually 5 precepts are also making us kind of a very gentle, very compassionate person. So all these are in a way different approaches. I mean, you can test which one is more applicable to you. So when you reflect about the 5 precepts, if your mind become more serene, thinking that, so I am now a very good person, now I am protecting 5 precepts, so everybody is happy because of my sila, I am not harming others, now they start to trust me. So likewise, you can understand the benefits of the sila. So this help us to generate little amount of happiness in ourselves, what you call anavajja sukha, because the way of our life, so I am benefiting and others also benefiting. I am not doing bad to the others and I am not doing bad to myself. So I am now therefore experiencing some sort of a happiness, some sort of a pleasure that is more serene, more subtle. And that is more useful to the practice than because it is generating some kind of a positive atmosphere for the practice. And I understand I actually deserve this practice. I am not a bad person. I am a good person. Therefore, I deserve this practice. I deserve the outcomes of this practice. So this, therefore, this positive atmosphere is quite important. So you can check among various types of these preparations, which one is more beneficial to you, and you can use that.
Question 10 of 11. This is a theory question. Dear Bhante, listening to today's talk, I have a question to ask. During the 11th stage, Samadhan Chitta, in the sense starts, can one get attached to it? Or that person has to let go of it as well? A yogi has to attain, does a yogi have to attain each stage and let go in order to move to the next stage? Thank you. That's the end.
Yeah, typically there could be an attachment. I can't say no. But later, because say for example, it's like you are climbing a ladder. So first you need to hold the pole and then only you can climb to the next pole. Holding it, you can't get on to the next. So we should know what is the right time to let go of it. And I think you all understand the simile example, because when you are climbing the ladder, one and each and every ridge, each and every pole, we have to hold at a particular given position. And when we reach the next one, we simply have to let go of it. We have to keep the foot on it and we have to let go of that. We are getting to the next one. So therefore, even when you reach the Samadhan Chittam, there may be a kind of a very calm, serene kind of a situation, and you might even attach to that. Doesn't matter. But later, we understand, okay, this also impermanent. This also come and go. So this also, if I hold, I can't proceed. If I hold, I can't continue the practice. Rather, now I am comfortable at this stage. Now it is the time to let go of even this stage and to open up for a more subtler level, more prominent level, or more advanced level. So therefore, it's kind of a first developing the present stage, and then we come across the next stage, and we may be associating this next stage as much as possible, and developing momentum using that stage, and then we are getting to the next stage. So likewise, from gross stage to the subtle stage. So letting go of the gross stage and get on to the subtle stage. And now when I'm associating this subtle stage, there may be a further subtler stage available. Now I have to let go of this subtle stage in order to reach that subtler stage. So that's a beautiful Dhamma verse that Buddha mentions, that this whole practice is designed in such a manner. So you have to let go of the gross state in order to reach the subtle stage. It applies throughout, not at the beginning stage. It applies throughout the whole practice.
Question number 11, and this is the last one for today. Theory question. What is the difference between Preeti and Sukha? That's the end.
Yeah, Preeti is actually the rapture where it is more gross. But Sukha is more subtle and it's very much like matured, very much like settled. Say in the Preeti, assume that you get goosebumps, you get kind of massaging kind of pleasure, you get like, waves like pleasure. So these are little, gross kind of happiness. But on the other hand, the Sukha is more into the contentment. So you have a very subtle kind of pleasantness is there, tranquility is there, but there are no goosebumps, there are no waves coming and going, there are no sort of bodily pleasurable feelings as such. But there's a kind of a serenity, kind of a comfort, kind of a, contentment is available in the mind. And the body also in a very comfortable, calm position. So therefore, it is the more refined kind of happiness that we can say the Sukha.
So that was the very last question. Because we've gone over time, I won't ask for any more questions, and I'll do the wrap up fairly quickly. So we had a good range of questions. There's a lot of general and theory questions today, and which is good. So people are using or trying mindfulness in other sort of activities and applying it everywhere as they see fit. Just with this program, so we've been doing this for 3 months now. We've done about 12 sessions. So we wanted to get some feedback from everyone on how to improve and things we can do better. So I'll put a link in the chat, and it'll appear in the email that we send out. So please give us some feedback so we can improve. And with that, so always grateful for Bhante to give up his valuable time, and we seem to go over time every single week. So, a bit happy that Bhante actually has a bit of time nowadays to run this program, especially for beginners and people who are English speakers. These are the limited programs that we have. So with that, I'd like to pass on merits to Bhante and end the session. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Okay, thank you very much. Teruvan Saranai.